Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Like, don't hear that. Don't hear that. I eat no for breakfast. That's my saying.
Well, I think too,
I eat no for breakfast.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
Get your merch, StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. Get 10% off your entire order. You can check us out on YouTube, YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We've got the show. We've got live news reaction. We may be going live tonight or tomorrow. I can't remember which one it was. But when something big, big speech or big thing's going on, we try to go live afterward, take your questions and answers. So just subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. You will be notified when we pop on live. Colin Hoback joins us to finally answer the question, who the hell actually invented Bitcoin? He claims to have the answer, you know. I'll take my Free Jay Johnston movement to the next level. But we start by doing liberal media allegiance. I pledge allegiance to Kamala Harris. That's what's required of you if you happen to be in the mainstream media today. And the Washington Post is finding that out. You just can't be neutral, which they aren't. But you can't just be neutral in this world. You must take a stand. To quote Dietrich Bonhoeffer, not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. And that's pretty much what they're saying now with every newspaper in America. The Washington Post says, however, it will not endorse a candidate for president. The column posts on the Post website Friday. Publisher and CEO William Lewis described the decision as a return to the newspaper's roots of non-endorsement. The Post did not begin regularly endorsing presidential candidates until 1976, when the paper endorsed, you'd be surprised to hear this, a Democrat, Jimmy Carter, for understandable reasons at the time, Lewis wrote. We recognize that this will be read in a range of ways, including as a tacit endorsement of one candidate, or as a condemnation of another, or as an abdication of responsibility. That is inevitable, Lewis wrote. We don't see it that way. We see it as a consistent with the values of the Post has always stood for and what we hope to get in a leader, character and courage and service to the American ethic, veneration for the rule of law and respect for human freedom in all of his aspects. Now, flowery language aside, doesn't it kind of make sense that you wouldn't sit here and just say, hey, we think you should vote for this candidate, now believe our journalistic coverage of this candidate and his opponent or her opponent in this particular case? You know, kind of surprising that people would ever even do that. Why did it become a thing? Well, I mean, you know, back in the days of the founding, there were lots of newspapers called the blah, blah, blah Republican or the blah, blah, blah Democrat, and they would come out and be overtly partisan publications. We have lots of people, you know, ideological and partisan publications now. Obviously, The Blaze is a conservative publication. We're straight up with that. And there's real room for partisan media or conservative ideological media or liberal ideological media. I don't know necessarily if it all has to be that way, though. I'd kind of like some that just didn't all the time promote one side or the other. I think that would be valuable to society. Now, Jeff Bezos is the owner of The Washington Post. And he wrote an op-ed as to why, because this became kind of a big controversial thing. The hard truth, Americans don't trust the news media. He is 100% right on that. I don't agree with a lot of his politics. And I know he's a billionaire, so we're supposed to think he's evil. But this seems all pretty freaking logical and common sense to me. Presidential endorsements do nothing to tip the scales of an election. No undecided voters in Pennsylvania are going to say, I'm going with newspaper A's endorsement. None. What presidential endorsements actually do is create a perception of bias, a perception of non-independence. Ending them is a principled decision, and it's the right one. Eugene Meyer, publisher of The Washington Post from 1933 to 1946, thought the same, and he was right. By itself, declining to endorse presidential candidates is not enough to move us very far up the trust scale, but it is a meaningful step in the right direction. I wish we had made the change earlier than we did, in a moment further from the election and the emotions around it. That was inadequate planning and not some intentional strategy. And of course, It is hard because everyone's insane right now. I don't know anyone who's actually sane for the next week. Get used to it. Every person you talk to is going to be completely bonkers. That's why we try to kind of boil down the election information to something that's understandable and something that is, frankly, outside of my own personal bias, which I have. I mean, I do. I want a certain side to win. I want certain policies to be enacted. But I still try to give it to you straight. And the only reason I do that is because I get annoyed by, you know, listening to partisan media on both sides. I hate the left. I hate the mainstream media, the way they constantly pitch for their candidates. And frankly, a lot of the coverage on the right is sort of the same way, right? Like, it's just kind of mindless support of Donald Trump or some other person on the right. And while I might support those same policies and the same candidates in many cases, I don't know. I mean, I can do that myself. Like, I can root for my own side on my own. I feel like you'd rather just have somebody who's trying to tell you what the truth is, and then you can do with that what you want. I mean, you know, sometimes I'm wrong and sometimes I'm right. And like, everyone has a political bias of some sort. Let me give you an example of it. Jeff Bezos, he's a freaking liberal. Dude's a big time liberal. He's no conservative at all. He's a very big time left wing guy. And, you know, in some ways, I think the left is like getting all angry about this, and in some ways, I think to their own, you know, their own detriment, frankly. Let me give you an example of this. Over 200,000 subscribers flee the Washington Post after Bezos blocks Harris endorsement. More than 200,000 people canceled their digital subscriptions by midday Monday, according to two people at the paper with knowledge of internal matters. Not all cancellations take effect immediately. Still, the figure represents about 8% of the paper's paid circulation of roughly 2.5 million subscribers, which includes print as well. Now, to me, this is unbelievable, right? Jeff Bezos is a liberal. Why is he doing this? Let me just give you a little peek behind the curtain. I think he probably does believe a lot of the stuff he said in that op-ed. I think he probably does believe that there's lack of trust, and endorsing a candidate for a newspaper just, you know, lets the cat out of the bag a little bit. Like, the fact that every newspaper in America basically endorses a Democrat, or Kamala Harris in this particular case, shows you where they're all coming from. Like, we all know it. Now, you can read the Washington Post for 5 minutes and realize who they're rooting for. It's not that big of a surprise, but it is a step in the right direction, you'd think, as to trying to at least convince people that you're fair. But that's the point here. The additional point, the second layer here, is if I were a liberal, I would be cheering this on, too. Why? Because the more that people believe we're not just hawking for some particular candidate, the better it is for all of our liberal viewpoints. The fact that we can present truth as sort of nonpartisan actually benefits liberals. They can say all these liberal things, but they didn't endorse, so maybe they seem a little bit more fair now. Is that true? No, it's not true at all. They're not a fair publication. They're far left. They've always been far left, at least as long as I can remember. And that's not going to change anytime in the future. In some ways, you kind of like are happy with an organization coming out and saying, hey, look, this is what we support and this is what we do. I would prefer a movement away from this approach, at least by some of these more mainstream publications. Come out and just be nonpartisan and actually cover the news correctly. A solution to this, though, is not stop endorsing candidates, but still be liberal on everything. That doesn't solve any problem. And that's my guess is that's exactly what Jeff Bezos wants them to do. In a way, it's trying to make their left-wing activism a little more subtle, a little more stealth. And, you know, I'm surprised the left isn't more on board for it. They really like usually efforts like this. Now, they're so far off board on it, their own writers are in revolt. We've seen some resignations at The Washington Post, and we saw a cartoonist. Yes, the importance of cartoons is back. Democracy Dies in Darkness. This is a cartoon by Anna Tanellis. And as I pointed out, they literally believe they are owed the endorsement of every single media organization in the United States, or democracy is dead, and they will tell you it's dead by some gray paint or something on a page. Now, look, Jeff Bezos is Jeff Bezos. He's a liberal. He's indulging a lot of this stuff. I mean, why is he letting these people write this stuff in his own paper? You know what I would say? Bye. I'd fire every single one of them that did it. Not because I actually care and I think it's going to do anything. Just because they're annoying. Any person who comes out and does this type of stuff, it's like, all right, stop being so self-important. You want to write a piece that says, look, I don't agree with this decision. Here's why. That's one thing. To act like democracy is dying in darkness because the Washington Post, one of the most liberal publications in the United States, didn't explicitly say they want Kamala Harris to win is just dumb. You should lose your job just because it's stupid. That's a whole nother thing. Now, he's not the they're not the only ones doing this. David Simon, the TV writer, he goes on and I'm not going to read this whole thing because it goes on forever. But he blabs about how he wasn't going to cancel his Washington Post subscription because it actually hurts the writers involved, not Jeff Bezos. Bezos has enough money and it's not going to hurt him. He says, but he wound up canceling. Why? Well, I probably shouldn't. And certainly this technocrat oligarch ever releases his grip on what needs to be an independent newsroom and editorial board indifferent to the financial positions of his publisher, then I'll return. But this kind of abuse is a public trust this kind of abuse of a public trust by a publisher is unacceptable. A couple things about how stupid this particular opinion is. Number one, if he wanted more money, and the publisher wanted more money, the obvious thing to do is to please your nonsensical liberal readers and just endorse Kamala Harris. This can't possibly be about money. I suspect it's actually that he thinks it's going to be better for liberals if they're not blatantly stating their bias. That's my guess with Jeff Bezos, though we don't know that for sure. That's not what his stated reason is. Regardless, at the very least, obviously financially, it would be beneficial to him to come out and blurt out how much they love Kamala Harris and how, you know, as the New York Times said, every vote against Kamala Harris is unpatriotic. That is what it would be the financially prudent decision for Jeffrey Bezos if that's what he cared about. It's not what he cares about. You don't buy the Washington Post if you're looking for profits, boys and girls. It's a freaking sinkhole of cash. And he's found that out over the years. He's just got so much Amazon cash rolling and he doesn't care. Okay? That's number one. Number two, I want to state this again. This is the last sentence of this tweet. This kind of abuse of a public trust by a publisher is unacceptable. I just was telling you this exact thing. They believe anything short of endorsing their candidate publicly is a breach of public trust. As in, half the country is going to vote for the other guy, and they deserve nothing. Every single publication must endorse my chosen candidate, or democracy dies. First of all, we're not a democracy. Second of all, you think very little of democracy. Your opinion is so low when it comes to democracy that you don't think it can survive this. It survived much, much worse. It survived the last 4 years somehow. Seems like we're having a vote. It survived January 6th, the darkest day of darkest days. It has survived all sorts of things. The elements of democracy that live inside our constitutional republic are important, but they don't die because one freaking newspaper didn't endorse your candidate publicly, even though every action they've taken throughout the 4 years would indicate they do endorse Kamala Harris. Now, the L.A. Times has also gone down this road. Their decision not to endorse in the presidential race sparks resignations and questions. Times owner Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong said that his decision not to offer readers a recommendation would be less divisive in a tumultuous election year. I have no regrets whatsoever. In fact, I think it was exactly the right decision. It's got to be cool to be a billionaire in that, like, you can make these decisions and just not care. I think it's right. Screw you. He said in an interview with the Times on Friday afternoon. There's only two places, by the way, you can do this. If you're a billionaire, you know, Elon Musk can do it. Jeffrey Bezos can do it. Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong can do it. And then also when you're on conservative media. This is why I work here, because I can say whatever the hell I want. And no one ever gets mad at me. They might get mad at me, but I just don't care. In fact, my business incentivizes me to blurt out whatever truth I think is true. Whatever thing I think is true, they incentivize me. They say, keep doing it. And there's very few jobs that allow that to occur. So what I would say is get your own show. Just it makes everything easy. Just get paid to blab nonsensically about your opinions on politics and everything cures itself. He went on. He said the process was to decide how we actually best inform our readers. And there could be nobody better than us who try to sift through the facts from fiction while leaving it to readers to make their own final decision. Now, again, Do I trust that they're actually giving us the best information at the LA Times? I do not. However, the approach to allow your readers, your viewers, to make their own decision on matters is a good one. I blab all the time about stuff, but, like, I never tell you who to vote for. I really don't. I mean, like, I'll blab about my opinions about what I think should be voted for, what policies I think are good. But, you know, I kind of think you're an adult and you should be able to live your own life and vote for whoever the hell you want. That's my view of all of this. I don't get to the point like and some, you know, some of my friends do where they'll be like, oh, you know, you must do this. You must do that. Do what you think is right. Spend the time figuring out what you think is right. My guess is if you're watching The Blaze, you have very similar opinions to what I do when it comes to what is right and what's wrong. But not everybody does. And if you don't, so what? I don't care. You're an adult. Make your decision. Make your decision on where you live. Make your decision on what you drive. Make your decision of what medicines you take. Make your decision on the information that you have and the way you want to live your life. I don't think that's a bad thing. Everyone else seems to these days. I don't know. I think it's, I don't like it. I don't like the world developing that way, but it is the way the world seems to develop. Although I will say USA Today is also on this bandwagon now. They're not going to endorse in 2024. While USA Today will not endorse for president, local editors at publications across the USA Today network have the discretion to endorse as a state or at a state or local level, said the USA Today spokesperson, Lark Marie Anton. And they told that to Fox News Digital. Now, this is getting everybody a little bit pissy. Newspaper non-endorsements at Washington Post, LA Times fit a trend, but their readers aren't happy. Now, I don't know. The readers aren't happy because at this point, most conservatives have given up on these publications. I happen to be one of them that has to read them all the time. So I get this stuff all the time. I'm constantly reading it and hearing about their nonsensical opinions, and those opinions are very, very tilted to the left, as you would imagine. So who's going to pay for that stuff if you're not working at conservative media? Well, liberals are going to pay for it. Liberals want the fan fiction. Liberals want to be preached to. They want to be able to be told all their views are right and they're the only moral ones and everyone else are Nazis. So they get that. They pay for it. They pay for that privilege. So, you know, of course they're mad that they're not endorsing Kamala Harris, but think about this. This is an actual trend, and I think it's overall a good trend. It needs to be paired with better coverage, and that probably won't come, so it won't be a positive change overall. But here's the trend. As recently as 2008, 92 of the nation's 100 largest newspapers endorsed either Democrat Barack Obama or Republican John McCain. By the way, it was almost all Obama, of course. But by 2020, only 54 made the choice between Trump and Biden. So they've cut that down by half. And I do think that's a good positive thing. It's a good direction. But you have to pair that, as I said, with fair media coverage. And that part of the equation is, of course, not occurring at all. TV hits Trump with 85% negative news versus 78% positive for Kamala Harris. A new analysis from the Media Research Center finds that broadcast evening news coverage of the 2024 presidential race has been the most lopsided in history. It doesn't just feel that way, it is true. Since July, ABC, CBS, and NBC have treated Democratic President Kamala Harris to 78% positive coverage, while these same networks have pummeled former Republican President Donald Trump with 85% negative coverage. Now, none of that's surprising. The numbers might be a little bit more exaggerated than even you or I thought, but we all know that was true. We've all watched the news, we've all seen coverage, we all understand what's going on here. The left wing has done a good job permeating the entire media complex, and they are able to present their left wing views as normal views. Right wing views are bad views. They're evil views. They're conservatism is Nazism, according to them. That's why, of course, a lot of this stuff is tried by the left. You know, they would not try it if it wasn't for the successful echoing of the mainstream media. If they just said it and everyone ignored it and said, oh my gosh, like if the media came out and said, you know, hey, come on, this is insane. What do you mean Nazis? What are we talking about here? Yeah, they want some lower taxes. Yeah, they want border security. Can we not call them Nazis? If that was the actual reaction of the entire media, which it should be, by the way, then a lot of this stuff would go away. But as we saw last night, we talked to the guy on, from CNN this morning on the radio show, Ryan Gerdersky, whatever his name is. I'm sorry, Ryan, I can't remember how to pronounce it off the top of my head. But he got kicked off of CNN because he made a joke about beepers and Hamas, basically talking to a guy who has been seen with many, you know, Islamic extremists over the years. And kind of made a Hamas joke because he kind of seemed to come off as a little pro-Hamas. This is after, however, he was called a Nazi. Ryan was called a Nazi for his views. And his, in fact, all Trump voters have been called Nazis over and over and over and over and over again. Kind of seems like maybe that's a bad approach. Maybe that's not the way this is supposed to go. But when you have the backing of the media, you can kind of get away with it. You have this sort of social cover to be able to say anything you want against the bad people because we're the good people. Makes everything nice and easy. And it all buckles up into what essentially usually leads to an endorsement of the Democratic nominee mindlessly, no matter who it is, no matter what situation. You don't think, you know, like, yeah, the New York Times went after Joe Biden when they thought they had a chance to remove him and have a better chance of winning with Kamala Harris. But the truth is, Joe Biden would have been endorsed by the New York Times anyway. It doesn't matter how out of it he was. It doesn't matter how many op-eds they wrote about him losing it, about how he couldn't think anymore. He still would have had the endorsement of every single one of those newspapers if it was something that wound up happening, that he stayed in the race. This is, of course, one of the reasons why, if it were him, he shouldn't have dropped out of the race, because by now, all these newspapers would have forgotten all about all that bad stuff, forgotten about the debate, and been telling you that that Donald Trump is a Nazi and you should elect Joe Biden. That's just the way this works. All right, we're going to take a break, come back on the other side with something a little bit different. Bitcoin, by the way, is up at 72,000 today. There's a new HBO documentary about who created, who is Satoshi. And it was pretty interesting. It's an HBO documentary. We have the director on next. Let me ask you a question. Do you think our country is going in the right direction? Does it feel like everything is falling apart? If you're alarmed, you are not alone. I think it's something like 80% of people think we're on the wrong track right now. And Americans from all walks of life have taken action to prepare for whatever is coming next. That starts with having an emergency food supply. Storing food in your home is the right thing to do because we're living in crazy times, which explains why so many people are preparing. Right now, you can get ready too with a 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. It comes with delicious foods like creamy stroganoff, honey wheat bread, and mushroom rice pilaf. The entire kit offers over 2,000 calories every day. The food kit lasts up to 25 years. Who knows what our country will look like then? When it comes to whatever's around the corner, at least you'll be ready for it. Prepare with Stew.com. Prepare with Stew.com. Get your 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. It's Prepare with Stew.com. Prepare with Stew.com.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Satoshi Nakamoto, the inventor of Bitcoin, could be one of the richest people on Earth. But many years ago, Satoshi had disappeared, and with Bitcoin being woven into the fabric of the financial system, solidifying its role as digital gold, perhaps the question of Satoshi's identity was more pressing than ever.
What indication do you have that he was collaborating with the government?
If you dig deep enough, the inconsistencies will emerge.
Seems like he's responding.
I've been told Satoshi was a group of people.
I have to be careful of talking about that topic.
He checks a lot of boxes.
I will admit, you're pretty creative. You come with some crazy theories.
Here's what I think happened.
It's Bitcoin. Don't trust, verify.
I'm joined now by Colin Hoback. He is the documentary filmmaker and director of the new HBO original documentary, Money Electric, The Bitcoin Mystery, which is available to stream right now on Max. Colin, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Hey, good to be here again.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We were thinking back, it was 2013 was the first time you were on the show, and it was about your documentary, Terms and Conditions May Apply. We had you on.
That's right.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We also had you on for your Q Into the Storm documentary, both of which are great, and I'd encourage you to go back and do some viewing of that if you missed both of those. But you kind of have this thing where you go into these dark corners of the internet and try to solve mysteries, and you're doing that here with your new documentary. Is that kind of what inspired you to go down this road?
Yeah, I mean, it's the intersection of the internet and reality, right? So a big part of what we're trying to do here is do forensics online and then follow those forensics into the real world, see where they lead. You know, because what you see on the internet can only take you so far. So with this one, this is one of the greatest mysteries that the internet has ever known. Who created Bitcoin? And after Q Into the Storm, where we, I think, exposed the forces behind QAnon, you know, in this project, we wanted to get to the bottom of who had created Bitcoin. What were their intentions? Are they still alive? And if they are, what are the ramifications of that? You know, this is someone who could become the richest person on Earth.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, Bitcoin has a market cap, I think it's something like $1.4 trillion right now. It's up over 70,000 again.
Yeah.
It really is amazing. And I don't know. I mean, I think I live in a world where, you know, people who commit the smallest of crimes get caught for their internet searches, right? Like, we find out everything about people because they leave this digital trail. It's just fascinating that Satoshi, you know, it's just not known who this guy is. I mean, how, it's so incredible. Is that kind of what made you just go down? I got to try to find the answer to this question.
Yeah. I mean, I got into Bitcoin in 2017. One of the things that really attracted me to it was the problem that it was trying to solve. Mm. And it's something that I've cared about for years, which is digital privacy. And it was trying to be cash for the internet. It was trying to bring the experience of being able to transact anonymously online. I think the film shows that it didn't quite succeed at that. There's some workarounds, but it ended up representing something a little closer to digital gold. And then there's this question of Satoshi, you know, and this is someone who I think we make a pretty strong case in the film, did what they could to dust their tracks. But we start playing cat and mouse with a couple of the key figures. And I think what you see happened is that this anonymous figure couldn't really continue developing Bitcoin anonymously. And they make this shift into the real world, but then do a lot of things to muddy their tracks. And there's this question of, you know, does someone who's worth potentially that much money deserve privacy, or should the public know who this is? You know, and I think if Satoshi had just mic dropped, and said, good luck, have a great time with my invention, I'm not going to be involved anymore, I'm never going to touch this stash, that would be one thing. It's a very different story if Satoshi stuck around, was continuing to develop Bitcoin, and may in fact even be driving this global effort to make Bitcoin the new standard.
I mean, it is interesting though that, as you point out, you know, maybe the most wealthy person in the world, I mean, right now at current valuations would be at least in the top 10. And they have not touched that stack. They got 1.1 million Bitcoin sitting here. They've never moved it. If it did happen, it would be immediately noticed. I mean, if that person is still alive and maybe one of the people that you think might be responsible for this, like what explains that? Why wouldn't they do that?
So first off, this stash that we know is Satoshi's, or we believe is Satoshi's, that was revealed by a bug in Bitcoin's code in 2013. There's a technical thing that a researcher found, but it exposed a pattern. This is called the Patoshi pattern. And this is how we know more or less that Satoshi mined certain coins, and you can tell if they're Satoshi's coins that have moved. However, there's no reason to believe that these are the only coins that Satoshi ever mined. How many old computers do you have sitting around? In the beginning, it was very easy to mine Bitcoin. You just needed to set up another computer, any computer, you know. It didn't take much to be able to do some mining. So I think that there's lots of reasons to believe that Satoshi had coins that didn't follow this pattern and would have continued mining after 2013, presuming they're still alive. I think there's a lot of evidence that suggests that as well. So I think you'll find this fascinating. Just, I think it was 6 days ago now, some of the earliest coins that were ever mined. It was only 5 days, actually, after Bitcoin's initial launch. This is January of 2009. Those coins just moved and were sold on an exchange. We're talking over $9 million worth of coins. Wow. This is unprecedented. And I think it's in reaction to the film.
Huh, that's really, I hadn't heard that. That's fascinating. We obviously don't know who is doing this. Is there any speculation as to what the reason is? You think it's just because they saw your film and like, oh, they're on our tracks and we need to start moving these things and take advantage of this now?
I think there's a good reason to believe that this is a reaction to the film. We're talking about a very large sum of money. We've never seen a move like this happen before. The closest thing actually was just in the run-up to the release. And prior to that, it had been almost a decade since anything had moved that was mined, say, within the first month. But for coins to move that were mined within 5 days of Bitcoin's launch, that's truly unprecedented. And it's hard not to see that as a reaction to the release of the film Money Electric itself.
That's interesting. So walk me through the process of making this documentary. Two things really fascinated me here. Let me start with this one. I don't want to give away anything that happens in the documentary because you got to watch it and experience it, I think, to really like go through all the steps. But like you kind of come up with an idea of you, a person you think is Satoshi. Like you come to a 100% conclusion in your mind, but pretty close to it. And you're talking to this guy and others around him throughout the entire film. How do you even get these people on camera?
That was one of the things that you ask yourself at the beginning. You know, is someone like Satoshi or someone like the guy who's behind Q, would they go on camera? And what I've come to realize is that I think there's a certain psychology to being behind a world-changing movement that you spearheaded anonymously. You kind of want the world to know. You kind of want credit. But at the same time, how do you take that credit? And also, if you fooled the whole world for so long, why wouldn't you be able to fool some guy holding a camera? I think they maybe enjoy the cat and mouse aspect of it a little bit. And they think, oh gosh, if I appear on camera and, oh, maybe I say something like I am Satoshi, they just simply won't suspect me. And I think the guy that we point to in this film, he's a master of game theory. He has an excellent strategy. And you'll see that over the years, he's very effectively muddied the waters. So I think maybe also he just didn't look me up before before he appeared on camera.
The other thing I was watching this, like the documentary is an interesting story, even if it didn't come to a conclusion. But like without a payoff at the end, like, it's a different movie. When you go into something like this, do you go into it knowing, or are you working through this kind of how it appears in the film?
Our process is very much how it appears in the film. The twists and turns, who I think it is for some amount of time because of where the evidence is pointing, this cryptographer named Adam Back. But then at some point I realized, okay, well, if he's not covering up for himself, who might he be covering up for? And you just go back and you keep doing research. I mean, we spent 3 years researching this thing. We looked down every imaginable rabbit hole. And the only thing that's really not represented in the film would be that incredible body of research. We just focus on kind of the key things that I think the audience needs to know to be able to understand this mystery. Because we made this more for general audiences than for people who are really, really well-informed in the space. Of course, we could have made a four-hour series, I think, going into all of the evidence and how we land on where we land. Wish we could have done that. Yeah. But I also think it's a better ride this way.
Speaking of general audience versus, crypto nerds, you have it's an interesting part of the documentary where you talk about the split between Bitcoin and what winds up being Bitcoin Cash, right? And
that's right.
That debate was a big thing in the crypto circles back in the day. And you kind of you seem to take a position of liking that Bitcoin Cash approach, which was more about maybe transactions than the digital gold. I mean, do you see like the future here? Do you come away with an opinion as to whether both of these things have a role? What is your take on that?
Well, I think at the heart of that debate was this question of how do you make Bitcoin function like cash? On one side, you had cryptographers, and I think like Adam Back, you had this company Blockstream, you had Peter Todd, you had folks who strongly believed that Bitcoin should not sort of fundamentally be changed. At least over time, that was what that's what their kind of position was. I think in the beginning it was much murkier. Not everyone really understood how to solve this problem. And there's this real split that forms in the community, those who want to change the quote unquote block size, and those who do not. And want to make Bitcoin kind of always stay the same. Because if you make a change, it creates a hard fork, and then you have two competing currencies. So this is a concern. And I think that both sides have valid arguments, but in the long run, you know, it's hard to exactly pick a side. You know, as they say in the film, Victor writes history. Bitcoin itself did not fundamentally change. Those solutions have been built kind of around Bitcoin, something like the Lightning Network, which allows you to buy coffee in a place like El Salvador, right? And Bitcoin Cash also exists, but it's just not really used.
Yeah, it's true. But there have been some solutions. But it was an interesting debate and a really interesting documentary. If you don't know anything about Bitcoin, you can watch it and go through the entire thing. Or if you're a crypto nerd, you're going to love this stuff, too. Colin Hoback, it's the new documentary. It's HBO original, Money Electric, the Bitcoin Mystery. It's available to stream right now on Max. Be sure to check it out. It's an incredible ride. Colin, great to see you. And thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, hope to see you again in 3 years.
All right.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
So Kamala Harris will apparently not be on the Joe Rogan podcast. Joe Rogan shoots down Kamala Harris podcast interview over campaign's demands. Now, one thing I will note, Rogan did clarify some of the reporting that had happened over the past couple of days that Harris, you know, had things off limits that she wanted to talk about. They wouldn't give no limits. He didn't say that was the reason exactly. He said it was that they said they couldn't make it happen and they wanted, if they were going to do it, he had to travel to her. And that it was only going to be an hour. Now, that's not the Joe Rogan format. He's not going to do that. A lot of me believes that they know he's not going to do that. So now it can look like they agreed to the interview, but just couldn't make it happen for scheduling reasons. You know, it's called a poison pill. So I think that's kind of what happened here. But J.D. Vance will be on Joe Rogan's podcast. I believe they're taping that tomorrow. So that'll be an interesting one because, you know, J.D., like, you know, Trump, you know, you might be familiar with him. Obviously, he's one of the most famous people in the world. You kind of know a lot of his stories. J.D. Vance wrote a book about a lot of his life, but I think it'll be kind of interesting to hear Joe Rogan ask questions about the crazy stuff that's happened to J.D. Vance in his life because he's had a wild life. So that'll be a kind of an interesting interview. Now, Harris, on the other hand, instead of going to do Joe Rogan, is going to turn the page on the Trump era at the site of his January 6th speech. I really want this one to end with just her just being like, "Now I want you to rush the Capitol!" Like, and then it would just it'd be like, "Go kill all the vice pro." Oh, no, don't do not the vice president. Kill all the Republicans. That would be kind of fun to do, just to see the Washington Post the next day be like, "Unlike the Trump situation on January 6th, this is actually justified. Hitler's going to be in office after all." So that'll be kind of interesting to see if that happens. I want a new January 6th. They need to do it after the election, though, because if they lose, they'll be January 6s all over the country. You will be feeling the burn of a, you'll be going this, "Ah, it's so cold outside, but my hands are warm. Why? Well, I'm warming them on the heat of a burned down police station. It's going to be wonderful. And I can't wait for it." By the way, the most important part of the January 6th news, in my view, is news development of featuring actor Jay Johnston. Of course, this stupid article says Bob's Burger actor sentenced to 1 year in prison for role in Capitol Riot. Of course, the correct way to write this headline is Mr. Show actor. Really, Jay Johnston, one of the probably I mean, he's not the most talented sketch artist, a sketch comedy actor of all time. I don't know who it is. He's up there, that's for sure. And he's an amazing, amazing comedian and actor. But he became conservative, I guess, or at least became MAGA and went to the January 6th rallies. Then was in the Capitol for 10 full minutes. That's the accusation. Now, I don't know if he was really there for 10 minutes, but that's what they're accusing him of. He's in there for 10 minutes. He helped wash the eyes out of people who got tear gassed, which is that a crime? I don't know. Maybe it is. Doesn't seem like it should be a crime to help people who are, you know, currently in pain. I understand why the tear gas happens in that situation. And as I've mentioned many, many times, January 6th sucked. The people who beat up on police officers, I believe, deserve to go to prison. I'm totally fine with that. There are a lot of people who went to prison, didn't really do much of anything. Of course, we talked to our own Steve Baker about this. He's mentioned he's seen some of the video of Jay Johnston. I will say the stuff I've seen, not much of anything. They accuse him of holding a stolen, not stealing it, but holding a stolen police barricade or police shield and participating in a heave-ho. Now, of course, he should go to jail for 50 years for such crimes, but give me a freaking break. By the way, they tried to get a longer prison sentence on him because 2 years after January 6th, he went to a Halloween party. He's a comedian. He went to a Halloween party and dressed up as the QAnon shaman, which objectively is funny. Like, he was caught up in this. All of his friends probably hate his guts, and he went as the QAnon shaman. That's kind of just funny. But they were like, oh, he's not taking this seriously. He made jokes about, oh, we broke a light bulb. I will have to fix those light bulbs. Give me a freaking break with this. Free Jay Johnston. Get him out of prison. His work in Mr. Show alone should give him a full and complete pardon. That's my full and official stance. How much time do you spend thinking about worst case scenarios? If you're a person who is prepared for them, the answer is like barely ever. I spend no time doing that. Like, for example, what would you do if one of your children needed a certain medication, but you couldn't get it? Maybe there's a supply shortage, or there's an order on backup, or there's a weather emergency and you can't get to the pharmacy. This stuff happens. People in North Carolina can tell you about that. There is something you could do to ensure that you and your loved ones have medication on hand when it's needed. And it's a solution that thousands of people have already discovered. It's called the Jace Case. It'll allow you to start stocking up on medication right now so you're prepared. The Jace Case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. We forget that people used to die from this stuff. They don't when you have access to your medications, but if you don't have access to the medications, you're not superhuman. You can die of these things too. There's 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. You just fill out a simple form online. You'll have that case in case you need it. Go to Jace.com and enter the code STEW at checkout. Get a discount on your order today. The promo code is STEW at Jace.com, Jace.com. The PulseCast is a little algorithm we cooked up that basically takes all the ingredients of polling forecasts and polling averages and prediction markets and puts them into a little soup and then gives you one little number on the other side so you can kind of understand what everybody is saying. You don't have to believe this. You don't have to make it affect your predictions. But it is just get a sense. So you're not getting kind of cherry-picked data from your side or the other side. What we get with the PulseCast, you can update it every day at glenbeck.com/PulseCast, by the way. Donald Trump with a 54.03% chance to win. This is, I think, his high. It might be the second highest he's been in the entire run of the PulseCast. He is up about 10 or 11 points since about a month ago. So this has been a very big run for Donald Trump. Still a very close race. And people are pointing out that it looks like two Jesus fish kissing. Doesn't it look just like that? They're kissing. Isn't that adorable? That's just something on the side. By the way, Trump is up by 1 point in the Battleground Wisconsin survey. This is according to USA Today Suffolk. This will be implemented into the PulseCast tomorrow to get a sense of where that lives. But it is interesting then that they had it's like a 300-page poll, and they didn't ask about the Senate race for some reason. Maybe they're going to release that later. But that race has become very, very close. I went over a bunch of the Senate stuff earlier on today. these races that I had as toss-ups on our board. I have got the board right here, actually, don't I? Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin were our five toss-up races. And with the exception of Nebraska, which we only have one poll of, and it's close, a two-point race, the other four have all moved dramatically towards Republicans. These were sometimes 5 and 7 point races. They've all moved to 1 and 2 point races now. And sometimes the Republican really, especially in the Ohio case, they're in the lead. So we'll have you more details. Maybe tomorrow we'll go through the Senate a little bit and the presidential forecast to give you an update. We're 1 week away from Election Day. Election night is 1 week away. Geez, and you're going to want to be a member of Blaze TV to experience this because you're not going to want to do it through the mainstream media. We got all the Blaze TV hosts in our coverage of the 2024 presidential election. Your chance to be part of something amazing. This election night, Blaze TV is going to have boots on the ground across the country, correspondents delivering, you know, really the pulse of all these different swing states, straight from where all the action is happening. All you have to do is subscribe. You can experience this night with us at Blaze TV. We speak the truth, no spin, no filters, just real talk, breaking down what's happening in real time. We'd love to have you with us. Be part of it. BlazeElection.com/Stu. You'll get $40 off right now. BlazeElection.com/Stu. 1 week left. I can't wait for all of this to be over. BlazeElection.com/Stu.